Bulging Brains, a horrible science book by Nick Arnold, illustrated by Tony DeSalles, read by Vanna Vance. Introduction. To hear some scientists talk, you'd think they knew everything about science. The speed of light is 299,792,458 meters per second. That's 186,171 miles per second. Wicked. The radius of a large atom is 0.00000005 millimeters. Awesome! But don't be fooled. Scientists don't know everything. After all, if they did, there would be no need for any new experiments. Scientists could sit around all day with their feet up. But, in fact, there are lots of mysteries left to solve. Lots of things we don't know or don't understand. For example, there's one object that's so mysterious it makes the brainiest scientists scratch their heads. It's wet and squishy and looks revolting. And oddly enough, it's found between their ears. What is it? No, it's not their disgusting, snotty nose. It's the bit inside their heads. Their bulging brain. Scientists aren't too sure how it works. But if scientists are puzzled by their own little gray cells, what chance do the rest of us have? No wonder learning about your brain can make your headache. The medulla oblongata is connected to the pons labyrinthiter. Groan, ache, throb. Well, if science scrambles your brains, help is at hand. This book is bulging with brain facts. For example, bet you never knew that in 1998, U.S. scientists found the part of the brain that makes you laugh. They gave an electric shock to this area of a girl's brain, and she started giggling uncontrollably. Ha ha, giggle, giggle! This is no laughing matter. And that's not all. Did you know that in one brain experiment, children were forced to sniff their little brother's stinky old t-shirts? Now that really is cruelty. So by the time you finish reading this book, your knowledge will be so vast, you could easily become the brains of your class. And who knows? Your teacher might even mistake you for a scientific mega-genius. But to enjoy the full benefits, you've got to ask your brain to help you read this book. Your eyeballs scan the letters, your brain makes sense of the words, and your memory reminds you what they mean. But hold on, looks like you've already started. Oh well, don't let me stop you now. Now ask your brain to send a message down thousands of nerves to tell your finger muscles to gently lift the next page. Get on with it then. Bulging Brain Basics. Dr. Funkenstein felt a rush of excitement as she gazed into the glass tank. For 5 years, she'd been planning this experiment. Now she'd done it, and she was looking at the result. The tank was bathed in an eerie light, and floating ghost-like in the tank's center was a strange and horrible-looking object. It was pink like a sausage and wrinkled like an old walnut, and it gave out the faintest whiff of blue cheese. Could it be an unknown creature from the depths of the ocean, or perhaps an alien from another world? Dr. Funkenstein knew better. She was gazing at a real human brain. A very special human brain, because it's alive! Dr. Funkenstein whispered excitedly. Peering closer, she could see the tiny worm-like blood vessels crisscrossing the brain surface. Dr. Funkenstein had done it. She was the first scientist in history to keep a brain alive outside the body. Don't panic. It's only a story. Scientists can't keep human brains in tanks. Yet. But this technique might be possible in the future. Perhaps you'd like to become the first brain surgeon to keep a brain in a tank? If so, beware. It's a bad idea to rush into brain surgery without getting to know a bit about your subject. Important facts like, what's your brain for? The brain is the part of your body that tells you what's going on around you. You can use your brain to order your body around and even to order everybody else around. But there's much more to your brain. Much, much more. Inside your brain are your precious memories, your dreams, your hopes for the future, and the knowledge of everything you love and care about. In your brain, you can sense lovely smells and tastes and colors. Your brain helps you feel great and happy about life, and that's the good side. But your brain also creates horrible fears and worries that can make you miserable. Your brain makes the thoughts and feelings that make your personality. Your brain turns your body from a living object into you, the person. Without a brain, you'd be as dead as a dodo's tombstone. So it's good to know that you've got your very own bulging brain right now between your ears. Hopefully. It makes you think, doesn't it? Inside the bulging brain. Still want to be a brain surgeon? Excellent. Now you find a bit about what the bulging brain does. You're ready to check out how it works. Bulging Brain's Fact File. Name, the brain. Basic facts, the brain is made up of three main parts. Forebrain, hindbrain, midbrain. Each area is made up of smaller bits with different jobs. Disgusting details. The brain needs energy from the sugar and oxygen carried in the blood, so it sucks in about 750 milliliters of the red stuff every minute. All this hot blood gives out lots of heat. That's why your brain is the hottest part of your body. Bet you never knew. Your brain weighs less than 1.3 kilograms. That's a little less than the weight of a large bag of sugar or the weight of all the germs swarming in your guts. In fact, the brain is only 1/50th the weight of a grown-up man, and it's far lighter than your guts, your blood, your skin, or your bones. Have you got a bulging brain? So just how clever is your brain? Well, if you're going to be a brain surgeon, you'll need to know all the answers to this brain-teasing quiz. 1. What happens if half your brain is damaged? A. It doesn't half hurt, haha. No, seriously, you can't remember anything.
Sorry, what was the question again?
B. You die. No one could survive such a terrible injury. C. You can live normally, although you have to relearn vital skills, such as talking. C. A bump on the head can injure the brain. Yet the brain can survive dreadful injuries. If one half of the brain is injured, the half that's left learns how to do the work of the damaged half. 2. What happens if someone cuts your brain in two? A. Your brain becomes twice as clever. B. Your brain functions normally, but you may find yourself doing your science homework twice. Why have you done it twice?
I don't know, miss. I don't know, miss.
Each side of your brain behaves like a separate person. C. This operation was performed in the 1960s on patients suffering from violent fits. The operation stopped the fits from spreading through the brain, but afterwards the two sides of the brain acted like separate people. One woman tried to put on a different shirt with each hand. She ended up wearing two shirts. 3. Imagine you were born without 97% of your cortex. That's the wrinkly part of your brain at the top, where you do your thinking. You're left with a tiny slice of brain in this area. What would happen to you? A. You'd be left with the brains of a half-witted stick insect. B. You'd be as brainy as anyone else, but only for 5 minutes a day. The rest of the time you'd blunder around like a zombie in a horror movie. C. Your brain would work normally, and you could be as brainy as your science teacher. Yes, teachers are said to be intelligent. C. People can be perfectly intelligent with very little cortex. This condition is caused by a disease called hydrocephalus. This results in too much fluid sloshing around the skull, so there's less room for the brain. 4. What would you feel if someone stuck a finger into your brain and waggled it about? A. Unbearable agony, the worst pain in the world. B. You'd feel hot and cold shivers all over your body. C. Nothing, because the brain cannot feel touch.
So is it A, B, or C?
Waggle. C. Your nerves take signals from elsewhere in your body to your brain. This means you actually experience pain, touch, taste, smell, sound, and vision in your brain. But oddly enough, there are no touch sensors on the brain itself. 5. How much energy does your brain use in a science test? A. Such a small amount that it can't be measured, especially if you don't know the answers. B. Enough to light up the classroom. No wonder the test makes you lightheaded. Haha. C. Just enough to power a dim light bulb. It's year 5. We won't need our sunglasses. C. Yes, in light bulb terms, we're all rather dim. Scientist Louis Sokoloff of the U.S. National Institute of Mental Health has found the brain uses the same amount of energy gazing dreamily at a sunset as it does in a tough science test. So what would you rather do? 6. Why do you feel tired after the test? A. All that mental effort strains the brain. B. During the test, your brain drew extra energy in the form of sugar in your blood. After the test, your body feels tired because it lacks this vital blood sugar. C. You were so tense your muscles bunched up and used up energy, and your muscles feel tired, not your brain. 6. If the questions were really easy and you managed to relax the scientist's test, you wouldn't feel so whacked. 7. How much of your brain is water? A. About 5%. B. 32%. Or C. About 80%. C. That's why when you become a brain surgeon and get to touch your brain, it'll feel like a squidgy blancmange or a soft boiled egg. The brain needs water for vital chemical reactions, such as sending nerve signals. Without water, a brain begins to overheat and starts to see things that aren't there. Ultimately, it will die. Bulging brain secrets. Psst, want to know a brain secret? There's more to your brain than water. For example, your brain's made up of millions of cells, and each one is so small you need a microscope to see it. No, these aren't cells that people get locked up in. Read on, your brain might learn something. Bulging brain cells. 1. Your brain is bulging with 100 billion nerve cells or neurons. These are special cells used for sending signals inside the brain. If you don't believe it, try counting them yourself. 2. Each cell is a living blob, and some are so tiny that you can fit 25 onto this full stop. You'll need a steady hand for this. 3. If you lay the cells from just one brain in a line, they would stretch 1,000 kilometers, a quarter of a way across the USA. 4. Unborn babies grow about 2,000 new neurons every second, but by the time you reach 12,000 of your neurons are dying off every day. That's 4.4 million a year. Don't panic. Parts of your brain grow new neurons. For example, new neurons grow in the part of your brain that deals with smelling, and that really is something to get sniffy about. Happy 26th birthday. Happy? I've just lost 4.4 million brain cells, Gran. And anyway, you won't run out of neurons. You can live a long life and still have 98% of them left. 5. Your brain cells are desperate for oxygen. Starve a brain of blood for just 7 seconds, and it goes on strike and switches itself off. You might call this fainting. scientists aren't quite sure how this fascinating process takes place. Yep, even now, scientists are baffled by the mysterious brain, but not quite as baffled as the people who first probed the brain's grisly secrets. Check out the next page and prepare to be baffled, bewildered, bemused, and horrified. Bulging brain boffins. The first brain surgeons had a problem. The bulging brain is mysterious because you get no clues to tell you what's going on inside it. I mean, there's no helpful sign saying, "Be quiet, I'm thinking." Unlike certain other parts of the body, the brain doesn't do interesting things like digest food, burp, or even fart. The brain just sits around all day squelching to itself. Cut here. You're better off without it, sire. All that squelching. So it's not all so surprising that these early pioneers made some mind-boggling mistakes. Mind-boggling mistakes. The ancient Egyptians and Greeks thought that the thinking part of the body was the heart. This seemed right because your heart beats faster when you're upset or excited. Is that why your teacher, who could be as old as the pyramids, makes you learn boring facts by heart? Well, anyway, the ancient Greeks and Egyptians were wrong. Wrong. Thinking center, heart. Right? Brain. Your heartbeat is controlled by nerve signals from your brain. Plush. Brainy Greek philosopher Aristotle, 384 to 322 BC, also thought the heart did the thinking. He reckoned the brain was simply a cooling system for the blood. According to Aristotle, when you get a cold, your cooling system overflows. That's why snot dribbles out of your nose. Wrong. Don't panic, it's just your brain overflowing. But he was wrong, too. Snot is made in the lining of the nose to catch germs and dust. Your nose is running in a cold because your body is trying to flush out the germs that cause the illness. Actually, Greek doctor Alcmaeon of Croton, 6th century BC, had already figured out what the brain was up to. He cut up dead bodies and noticed that there were nerves running from the eyeballs to the brain. He also noted that patients with head injuries couldn't think clearly. Clearly, thought Al, the brain has to be involved in seeing and thinking. Use your head and you'll see what I mean. Nerves, brain. Eyeball camera takes picture and nerves send it to the brain. Brain sees things and thinks. Right. But for over 1,000 years, doctors remained puzzled. They weren't sure how the brain worked or what the different bits were for. There were theories, of course. One widely held view was that you did your thinking in the fluid-filled spaces inside the brain known as ventricles. The rest of the brain was a squelchy bubble wrap to cushion the vital holes. But by the 18th century, scientists were looking at the brain in a more scientific way, and making strange and grisly discoveries. Bulging brain secrets. Franz Gall, 1758 to 1828. As a child, Franz noticed that one of his school friends had bulging eyes. This boy was good at spelling, and Franz wondered if everyone who was good at spelling has bulging eyes. After he became a doctor in Vienna, he cut up dead bodies and came to the conclusion that the eyes bulged because the brain behind them was also bulging. Franz reckoned this bulging area dealt with spelling. No, you can't have my body for cutting up when I'm dead. N-O spells no. Franz was convinced that the size of other brain bulges affect for your personality, for example, whether you agree, enjoy smashing things up, or have a sense of humor. And to prove this, he measured hundreds of skulls of executed criminals and tried to link the bumps he found with the criminal's known personal traits. A vicious, evil criminal who died a violent death? No, it's Auntie Flo. She fell off the roof rescuing her cat. Despite his many skills, Franz was on the wrong track. There was no link between the shape of your brain and your personal qualities. But up to the 1850s, many people believed Franz had found a way to measure personality. When Franz's own brain was examined after his death, it was found to be smaller than average. Now, I wonder what that could mean. The Talking Brain, Paul Broca, 1824 to 1880. Paul was working as a surgeon in Paris when he met a patient named Tan. Tan was his nickname because the poor man had suffered a brain injury that left him unable to speak any word except Tan. Tan was already ill when he saw Broca. Broca could do nothing to help his patient, and a few days later he died. Tan's misfortune was a great opportunity for science. Broca cut open Tan's brain and found that the injury was in what's now imaginatively known as Broca's area. Surely it ought to be called Tan's area. Broca realized that this area of the brain helps to pronounce words properly. This was a major discovery, but as far as speech goes, it wasn't the last word. Get it? In 1874, German scientist Karl Wernicke, 1848-1905, found another bit, now known, surprise, surprise, as Wernicke's area, which helps you choose the right words. People with brain damage in this area often talk utter drivel with perfect grammar. How are you feeling today? Like a shy headache, Mr. Wernicke. The Twitching Brain, Julius Edward Hitzig, 1838-1907. If Mrs. Hitzig had walked into the bedroom unexpectedly one day in 1870, she would have received a horrible shock. Her husband and his pal Gustav Fritsch were experimenting on a dog's brain, using her dressing table as a workbench. At the time, Hitzig was working as a doctor in Switzerland, but he didn't have a lab of his own. By the way, it's a bad idea to use your mum's dressing table to practice your brain surgery. You could use the bathroom instead, but make sure you mop the floor afterwards. Actually, the dog was getting quite a shock, too. An electric shock to the left side of its brain. Hitzig found that this made the dog's right legs twitch. This electrifying test proved that the left side of the brain controls the right side of the body, and vice versa.
Later in the year, war broke out between Germany and France, and Hitler got the chance to try the same test on wounded soldiers with bits of their brains shot away. The results confirmed his theory. As a result of the work of these pioneers, new groups of scientists began to take an interest in the brain. You'll be coming across some of them later on in this book. Here's a handy guide to help you spot them. Spot the scientist. Neurophysiologist. Interested in finding out how the brain and nerves work. What they do? Study bits of chopped up brain and analyze chemicals from the brain. Where they work? University laboratories or large hospital labs. 2. Neurologists. Interested in studying the brain and nerves too, but they're especially keen on horrible but fascinating brain and nerve diseases. What they do? Treat patients with the diseases of the nerves and brain. Some of them are also neurosurgeons, which is the posh term for brain surgeons. Where they work? Hospitals. 3. Psychiatrists. Interested in diseases of the mind. Psychiatrists are trained as doctors rather than purely scientists. What they do? Talk to the patient and attempt to find the causes of their illness. Where they work? General hospitals and psychiatric hospitals and clinics. 4. Psychologists. Interested in studying the brain by looking at the way it makes people behave. What they do? Set up experiments to find out how people react in certain situations. Some of these tests are a bit wacky. Some psychologists are interested in diseases of the mind, but unlike psychiatrists, they are not trained as doctors. Where they work? University labs and hospitals. Peculiar psychologists. The psychologists take their lead from a very peculiar German scientist, and here's his story. Hall of Fame, Gustav Fechner, 1801 to 1887. Nationality, German. Fechner's brain was always bulging with ideas, but his interest in the mind began with a horrible accident. The physics professor was studying light when he blinded himself by looking at the sun. Something you should never do. So you could say poor old Gus got blinded by science. Get it? He became so miserable that he went mad for 2 years. But one day he was sitting in the garden and he felt a sudden impulse to tear off his bandages. Amazingly, he found he could see again. Incredible colors flooded his brain, and he was so excited he imagined he could see brains inside flowers. Yes, you did read that last bit correctly. Gus wrote a peculiar book describing how plants have minds. Believe this and you're a real cabbage brain. 2 years later, Gus was enjoying a lion. Well, maybe enjoying is the wrong word. Gus was racking his brains. And not about whether he'd find a toy in his packet of breakfast cereal or how to make contact with a turnip. He was trying to think of a way to study the brain using scientific experiments rather than cutting it open on an operating table. Then he had a brainwave. All he had to do was measure how the brain reacts to different sensations. For example, in one test, Gus shone a light in a volunteer's eyes and slowly increased the brightness until they noticed the change. This allowed him to measure the brain's ability to notice changes in brightness. Ah, in my eyes! Increased brightness till volunteer requested I halt. Gus had launched a new branch of science called psychology, the study of human behavior, although the name actually means study of the mind in Greek. And this exciting new science owed its existence to the fact that scientists fancied an extra snooze. Tell your parents the story next time you want a lion. You never know, they might even fall for it. Fechner's work was continued by German Wilhelm Wundt, 1832 to 1920, who set up the world's first psychology lab. Wundt never laughed or smiled or joked and spent his entire life working. Sorry, readers, no jokes allowed with this picture. His books totaled 53,735 pages. That's equal to writing a 500-page book every year for 100 years. He wrote so much that critics complained that it was hard to discover what Wundt actually thought about. American psychologist George A. Miller wrote, "The sheer bulk of his writing made Wundt almost immune to criticism. A critic would be buried under mountains of detail." Brilliant, eh? So if you want to baffle your teacher, write a 500-page essay for your science homework. But this tactic didn't stop other psychologists disagreeing with Wundt's approach to psychology. Increasingly, they were finding that the brain did a lot more than simply respond to sensations. Another German psychologist, Max Wertheimer, 1880 to 1943, wondered if the brain plays tricks to help make sense of a film. A film is made up of thousands of pictures that you see very quickly, about 24 pictures a second. The brain can't keep up with this rapid change, so it sees the pictures as a continuously moving scene. So your brain gets the whole picture, and you get the whole movie, including the exciting bits and the happy ending. Message from brain. Exciting bit equals open mouth and shriek. Max jumped up this idea on a train in 1910. He was supposed to be on holiday, but he excitedly leapt off the train. He waited for it to stop first. He wasn't that excited, and set up experiments to find out why. I must set up experiments, train of thought. Holiday trained scientist. Max proved the brain sees the whole scene first and then figures out how the moving objects relate to one another, and he worked out a new theory of psychology called Gestalt, based on these ideas. Gestalt actually means whole in German, and the new theory underlined the importance of finding out how the brain makes sense of things like the film. This was a step forward from Wundt's work, which simply looked at how the brain responds to sensations. Meanwhile, American psychologists such as John B. Watson, 1878 to 1958, and later Berhus Skinner, 1904 to 1990, were changing the behavior of rats by training their brains. You can read more about Watson and his wacky experiments. Bulging brain expressions. Two brain surgeons are quarreling. You don't know an almond from a fruit stone? Is the quarrel about gardening? Answer, no. The amygdala and putumen, almond and fruit stone in Greek, are odd names for areas of the brain. Confused yet? Well, there are lots more bits and pieces you'll need to know about if you're going to be a brain surgeon. Maybe things would be clearer if you could get your hands on a real dripping brain. Fancy a squidge? Hope so. If not, the next chapter's so nasty, it could drive you out of your mind. Better sharpen that scalpel. The end.